Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
It's widely believed that the Inquisition's trial of the 17th century scientist Galileo was wrong, but a new book about him by Michael White claims it also was bogus. Hello, welcome to The Ark on ABC Radio National. I'm Rachel Kahn. Even if you haven't read a biography of Galileo Galilei, you're sure to know that his observation that the Earth revolved around the Sun was what the Church objected to. But there was more. In fact, there's a lot more to Galileo, his egomania, his dangerous liaisons, and his unusual beginnings that make him fascinating.
His father was a musician, composer, and music and science, or music and mathematics, very closely related. So he was very into music when he was young, and I think that that was a sort of entree into mathematics. But also his father was a great, probably too strong to say anti-Christian, but he was very dismissive of conventional orthodox religious practices at the time, and I think this rubbed off on his son. Yeah,
definitely. Didn't Galileo actually have aspirations to become a priest at one time?
Yeah, he did, and it caused a lot of trouble for a while, because I guess he was just going off and doing his own thing. Maybe it was a case of children that get to a certain age, they tend to do the opposite to what their parents want them to do, and he did actually take himself off and go to a monastery to train as a priest, and his father then found out about it and dragged him away by the ear.
Well, that's unusual, having one's priestly ambitions thwarted by one's father. But the pursuit of scientific inquiry would have been pretty risky, given what happened to his countryman, Giordano Bruno, just a generation before Galileo.
Well, that's right, but it all depends really on how somebody approaches science at that time. And Giordano Bruno was a great philosopher, but he was also very, really extreme in his views and totally uncompromising. And he was also from the cloth, and he was a priest himself. And he did outrage the church and turn them completely against him, so that he was hunted down and eventually caught and imprisoned and then tortured and executed. Galileo was far more conventional. He went through the usual route of academia, and he expressed controversial views. And it was only very gradually, as his career progressed, that he became more out of sync with the church line on things, and then eventually broke with the church completely and ended up having the trial and all that.
Well, I was very interested in reading in your book, your biography of Galileo, that his inaugural lecture in Florence to the Florence Academy was actually about Dante's Inferno, about the dimensions of hell.
Yes, I know it sounds absolutely bizarre to us today, but to people of Galileo's time, it was a very serious thing, and they believed in the physical existence of hell, and they believed, therefore, that it could be measured. And the way he did it was taking clues from Dante's work, in which he describes hell and describes the size of various aspects of hell and size of the devil and all this sort of thing. And so Galileo could work out proportions and get a figure for how tall the devil was and how large hell was. And this was a serious subject that he gave a very important lecture on at a very serious conventional academy.
So it wasn't just an amusing tongue-in-cheek exercise. Do you think Galileo believed in hell?
I think he may well have done. I mean, it's very difficult to judge from anything left to us, but you've got to remember he grew up as a conventional Catholic, albeit in a family where the father wasn't terribly conventional or orthodox or a churchgoer. But he grew up in an age when everybody was a Catholic in Italy, and everybody went to church more or less and towed the line and did what they were told. And so, you know, he would have been educated into believing these things. He may have questioned them, and he may have thought, as we do, that, you know, hell is a sort of description of some imaginary thing, a symbolic thing. He might not have thought in real life that it was a place under the ground that you went to. But it's very difficult to know. I mean, for all his scientific analysis and his brilliance as a mathematician, he might well have held certain rather strange old-fashioned ideas to us, but, you know, were conventional ideas at the time.
Well, Galileo rose to fame on the back of his telescope, one might say. He came to the attention of the Pope because of it. But wasn't the telescope a potentially dangerous instrument to hand to the Pope?
Well, yes, it was in a way. Yes, I mean, you have to think about what he was actually doing with it. He had made some unique observations of the moon and the planets and had actually drawn conclusions from these observations that flew in the face of Aristotle and his ideas. And what you have to do is remember another thing, which is that way back, long before Galileo, Aristotelian ideas and the church form this strange marriage. I don't really understand how it happened, and I don't think there's any clear explanation of how it happened, but probably 1,000 years before Galileo, the church adopted Aristotle as their sort of mascot, and they decided that the Aristotelian view of the universe was the one that fitted with Christianity. And Aristotle, one of Aristotle's ideas was that anything outside the earth or the earthly sphere was known as the heavenly sphere, and it was perfect and unblemished. And he just stated this. I mean, it wasn't grounded in anything, but the church adopted the view. So if you then showed or you strongly felt that there was some imperfections in the heavenly sphere for some reason, then you would actually be a heretic, or you'd be going against the doctrine that was accepted. And of course, Galileo turned his telescope first to the moon after he created the telescope. And what did he see? Craters and mountains. And the moon is outside the earthly sphere, so it should be just an unblemished ball. What's curious is that even when you look at the moon from the earth, you can see that it's not a perfect clear ball, but somehow this was swept under the carpet. So yeah, I mean, Galileo's telescope enabled him to see things that you shouldn't have seen, and things that went against Aristotle and therefore against the church. And giving that telescope and his work, what he's discovered, to the Pope is obviously sort of a strange thing to do in a way. I mean, you can see why he did it, but equally it would have been a dangerous thing to do.
Well, Galileo wasn't the only one at the time who held heliocentric views, for example, that the planets revolved around the sun, or that held unorthodox views. They gathered together in the Lincian Academy. Now, why wasn't that academy shut down?
Well, that's a very good question, and it was one that I was grappling with when I was writing the book, and you can't actually find any clear explanation to that. They were an unorthodox group in many ways. I mean, they dabbled in all sorts of strange stuff that has become the matter of fiction with Dan Brown's Angels and Demons. He's sort of taken that and extrapolated the whole idea of Galileo being involved in the occult. But, you know, even the relatively prosaic things that they were doing, like using the telescope and microscope they used as well, were sort of unorthodox. The fact is that the academy was led by a chap called Prince Cesi, who was a very high-ranking aristocrat, and the only conclusion I could draw was that in Italy at that time there were certain ranks in society where you could actually get away with most things. So if you were an emperor or a king or a prince, you could do things that were unorthodox, and as long as it wasn't going too far and threatening things seriously. I suppose Cesi just kept on just on the right side of things for his rank, and so he carried the others with him.
Well, it certainly shows that Galileo was aware of cultivating the right associations. He was pretty politic. So when did he really overstep the line to come into the view of the Inquisition?
As you say, he did cultivate links, and he networked, as we would say today, very cleverly. But he did also create enemies all along the way. The main enemy he created was the Jesuit order, who were a group of, a group of Catholics who are sort of like the intellectual wing of the church, if you like, and they did their own experiments and their own observations of the heavens, and he disagreed with many of them, the high-ranking Jesuits. But the real thing that is at the root of the biography and makes it a different biography to the ones that have been written before is that I investigate the whole matter of why he was on trial in the first place. And the conventional story is that Galileo was writing about Copernican ideas, heliocentric philosophy, and that the church didn't agree, and they said that the Earth was at the centre of the universe, and Galileo said, no, the Earth went round the sun, and that was the cause of the trial. But that's actually a sham, in that what really happened was that he began to investigate atomic theory, or a very primitive form of atomic theory. And he wrote a book called The Assayer, in which he described a very, very simple atomic theory. And the consequence of this theory is that the Eucharist, which is at the centre of the difference between the Catholic Church and the Protestant Church, could not actually be the way the Catholics think it is. Catholics believe that when you take the bread and the wine, that you are actually consuming the body and the blood of Christ. Protestants believe that they're symbolic. It seems like a subtle difference, but it's a huge ideological difference between the two churches. And Galileo's atomic theory showed that you couldn't transform normal bread and normal wine into some other form, because it would be going against the rules of science. And of course, the church has this mystical way of explaining it, but Galileo's theory said that this was all nonsense. So this could never be let out, because it would be a terribly dangerous thing for the church to be exposed in this way at that particular time. And so what they did is they said, look, you can't say this, you can't write this, and in fact, we'll burn you at the stake if you insist upon it. What we'll do is we'll put you on trial for something else, and you'll probably get let off with, you know, prison sentence, but you must never say anything about this idea of yours. And, well, he had to agree, because the alternative was to be burned at the stake. So.
As Giordano Bruno had been, and didn't he also have similar ideas? I mean, he was pretty critical of what he called superstitious views of the blood and body of Christ.
That's right. He didn't have a scientific theory to explain it, because he wasn't a real scientist like Galileo was. But he had all sorts of extreme ideas that considered heretical, that the Holy Trinity wasn't a viable idea, that the virgin birth couldn't have happened, that there was life on other planets, which would actually go against the idea that the Earth is unique. And they were philosophical ideas. They weren't backed up by anything like Galileo's ideas were. But he just didn't recant, he didn't back down, and he just kept insisting that he was right. He was a bit mad. I mean, Galileo was sane, and Bruno wasn't sane.
But one of the things that your biography of Galileo makes clear is that his own personality was something of a factor in what happened to him, because Galileo seemed to be a controversialist or perhaps even an egomaniac.
Yes, absolutely. He was an egomaniac. He was a very strong-willed, powerful personality ever since he was young. And he rubbed up the professors the wrong way all the way through his university days, and got expelled from university and didn't finish his degree properly and had all sorts of trouble. And he did create enemies that actually exacerbated the whole thing when he did come to trial. But he didn't go as far as Bruno in that there came a point when he realised that he had to shut up and just go along and toe the line.
Your biography is called Galileo Antichrist. Was he in fact ever accused of being such?
Not in those words. I suppose it was a bit of a melodramatic title to sell books, but to be honest, but he was anti-Christian. I mean, his view about the Eucharist is anti-Catholic. And therefore anti-Christian, because Catholicism and Christianity were one thing really at that time, as the Protestant church was growing. So in a way, he was, I mean, it could be anti-Christian in the title would be probably more accurate, but it's not, doesn't roll off the tongue so well.
Do you think that Galileo's belief in God was eliminated by his scientific inquiry, or changed?
Yeah, changed, I think, is a good way of describing it. I think that almost everybody who lived at the time believed in God. And it just depended on how you saw God. I mean, probably most people saw him as a figure with a white beard sitting on a cloud, because that was the sort of fairy story that they were given at the time.
Well, if Lucifer inhabited hell.
Exactly, exactly. But what I imagine is that Galileo, as he grew older and discovered more about the universe through science, mathematics, began to have a more, shall we say, modern view of what God might be, if God exists. And I'd imagine that he believed in the existence of God, but that God was some sort of natural force that held the universe together and created the paradigm, the model that the universe worked on. And he became sort of poster boy for the anti-Orthodox Church. So he was actually branded heretic, but he avoided being burnt at the stake.
And it became a badge of honour.
Yes, absolutely.
Science writer Michael White, whose book Galileo Antichrist is a great read. Book details are at abc.net.au/religion and follow the prompts to the Ark, where you can also download the audio. In Westminster Abbey, the royalty are buried along with commoners, Anglican divines, dissenters and Catholics. A scandal. Next week on the Ark with me, Rachel Kahn. And join me tonight for the apocalyptic sect that's become a world leader in spirituality and health, the Seventh-day Adventists, on The Spirit of Things at 6.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.